This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Last week, the Kansas City Council once again took another whack at limiting property tax abatements to developers. This time, the council trimmed the number of years that developers could get the breaks from 25 to 15 in many cases. The amount of the abatement also was trimmed to 70% for 10 years. Today, abatements can total 75%. A plan to give school districts a say in this process was rejected. After all, school districts, public libraries, and the like lose out in this process when abatements wind up going to developers. Here to talk about his reaction to this is Kansas City School District Superintendent Dr. Mark Bedell. Superintendent Bedell, always good to have you here. Welcome.
Steve, how are you today, sir?
I'm well, thanks, and thanks again for taking time. Well, the City Council took another step in the direction of limiting incentives for developers, which results in money coming out of the pocket of your school district. What did you make of it?
Progress. I mean, that's what the thing I shared with our team is, you know, we have a list of things that we were looking for, and realizing that when you negotiate, you're not going to necessarily get everything that you want, but, you know, take a few of the items and become a little bit closer to having a more balanced system. And that's where we're heading towards. But we have a lot of work to do in this area still, sir.
What would you have liked to have seen, Mark? I mean, should these incentives be wiped out altogether?
I don't know about that. I've always talked about the importance of incentives and what it could do to help revitalize a city or revitalize a particular community. I truthfully wanted to be able to have that opportunity to opt out and to have control over it. Most people don't know, but of 24 projects that went through last year, KCPS opposed only 4 of them. Mm-hmm. And so we're not an anti-economic development district, but what we are is that we want to have this focus on equity and to ensure that where some of these projects need to take place, that they are going to take place in those areas. We need a revitalization of our communities east of Truce. And that's probably been the biggest area of frustration for me around how this these incentives have been utilized and taken advantage of.
So you'd like to have a say in this process, more of a say in this process. Does that include the ability in your mind, Mark, of being able to veto these projects if they don't meet what you believe is equity?
That's correct. I think we as a school district, and there are many other districts around the country that have that authority. They're at the table on the front end. They get to participate in the process and they get to say, hey, we think this is a project that's worthy of receiving these types of incentives or at the particular levels. So we want to be able to do the same. And what we've learned here in Kansas City, being a district that has generally ranked in the top 20 in the top 20 in the United States on the amount of money that passes through the district because of incentives, not being at the table and having an opportunity to rein some of this in makes it a lot more difficult. And the reality is, people, if you give them 25 years, they will take 25 years. I mean, if you tell me I can have 25 years, I'm going to do it because I can do it. Mm-hmm. So having it now be reduced to 15, you know, that is something that we're happy about and with some of the changes that were voted on last week.
It is remarkable because I have seen those numbers that you're referring to, Mr. Superintendent, that the Kansas City Public School District ranks 17th of 5,600 school districts nationally when it comes to the level of abated property tax revenue. I mean, why do we rank so high? For a city our size, why would your district be up as high as it is?
That's a great question. I mean, to me, it just goes back to what I said in the letter last summer. You know, I talk about the discriminatory practices that are constantly perpetuated here in Kansas City. And, you know, I've never backed down from having this conversation. I observed it in the first 3 months of being here in 2016, that this was different than any other place that I've lived around how this divider line really defines our city as a whole. And so, you know, looking at all of the projects that have taken place, whether it's downtown, whether it's in the plaza, whether it's Broadway, and then the limited amount that has taken place east of Truce in the neighborhoods that by design, you know, when we go back to redlining back in the 1930s, communities intentionally shut out of economic development, any type of economic prosperity by design based on who was living in those communities, those practices still continue to this day. And that, you know, so people were upset saying he's calling me a racist. No, I'm not. I'm talking about the discriminatory practices that continue to plague our communities based on who lives in these communities. And this, that, that, this whole, how we have been handled, I think to the tune of $1,062 per student in abatements is what we don't see. So yeah, it's tough. You're absolutely right. And it's something that, that we just have to continue to call out. I'm not going to have a whole bunch of problems if we have projects opening up over by Central High School, or we have businesses opening up over by Northeast High School or East High School, where our families have opportunities to get employment locally, to be able to not have to catch a bus or drive miles and miles to get to somewhere. If we can have that kind of economic development in those communities, then you'll begin to see a revitalization of homes and apartments and housing. All of that ultimately will reduce the amount of mobility that we have to deal with as a school district, because people are now wanting to live in those neighborhoods because there is some level of investment coming in from the city as a whole, along with the school district, to revitalize those communities.
Kansas City School District Superintendent Dr. Mark Bedell is my guest. Does it go without saying, Mark, that urban districts are hit harder than suburban districts because that's where most of the development winds up taking place?
Yeah, I, absolutely. We've seen that here in Kansas City. We see it in St. Louis. We see it in Philadelphia. We see it in Pittsburgh. I mean, we've done our research and we've looked at a lot of your urban districts. And ultimately, because of the accessibility that you have being in the center of everything, those areas are going to generally be targeted. My issue is we're only targeting areas that truly don't meet the true definition of blight, right? We're targeting areas so we can find loopholes within the language on how projects are going to be awarded. And then here, when you have multiple granting agencies, whether it's Port Authority, whether it's PIEA, it's so many. I mean, I tell my team, I'm so confused on how many different organizations or agencies can grant these projects so people can constantly circumvent. They can go from one to another. So it's kind of easy to get around, you know, getting your projects to be approved, rather than us trying to concentrate to make the city more inclusive and more of a equitable city for everybody. And that, that's really what I've been trying to push. I just want to see more even development, because there's a book called Race, Real Estate, and Uneven Development, The Kansas City Experience. And I believe it's from 1900 to 2000s or something like that. But I mean, it's documented how these practices plague our city, and people turn their head the other way as if nothing's wrong with the practices.
Right. Well, to your point, the tax abatement per student in Kansas City, $1,069 a student. In North Kansas City, it's just $379. Again, maybe the difference between inside the city and maybe a little bit on the outskirts of the city. Pretty remarkable difference. So what is the next step here? You said the issue's not over yet, Mark. Where are we going here?
Well, the next step is to work on the scorecard, to get that scorecard, KC scorecard, aligned across all of the different agencies, so that we can, so it'll be easier to have some accountability around why projects are being granted and who's granting the project. So we just need to have some uniformity there.
Well, what is the scorecard, Mark, that you're talking about?
I mean, I think it's just, it's a way that, I don't want to Let me not. No, I'm not going to answer that because I don't want to give the audience the wrong answer.
Okay, but it's a way of keeping.
I have an idea of what the advanced scorecard is, but I want to make sure. I mean that I'm giving the right answer on it, and so.
But it's a way of gauging whether any one development is appropriate or not. Do I understand?
Well, yeah, and I mean, yeah, and I think there's criteria that they have to meet. There's different indicators that need to be checked off. Like I don't know, like off the top of my head, everything that's on it, but.
Sure.
It really does help articulate through the entirety of the process that will say, yes, you've met all of these different criterias. At this point, we all agree that this is a project worthy of moving forward.
Let's move to a different topic here, Mr. Superintendent. How close are your students to returning to their classrooms? Is March 15 still the plan?
Yes, sir. March 15th is still the plan. Our early childhood centers have been up and running since September. We've had community centers up and running since September. We started our learning centers about a month ago. We just shut those down over at Paseo and at Martin Luther King Elementary because of bringing back all of our faculty and staff. So today's the first day that our faculty and staff are back in their classrooms. So they're teaching virtually, but they're teaching from their classrooms now as we begin to get everybody reacclimated back to being in their classrooms. And then on the 15th, we will start with our first phase of students who will come back. And then we'll have another group come in on the 22nd. And then April 5th will be our final group, which will be our eighth graders and then our 10th through 12th graders.
The concern is that many of your teachers and your staff haven't been vaccinated yet. How big a worry is that?
It's a worry, but what we've done in the school district is we've addressed those safety mitigation requirements by the CDC. Every classroom, you know, will have shield desks by the time all of our students are in. Every school will have temperature check stations. Every kid will have masks. They'll have a bag of all goodies and just safety things like water bottles, hand sanitizer. And then, you know, our teachers will, their desks are also blocked off. So all of our teachers have a workspace area that is blocked off and protected. And then everybody will be required to wear their masks. That's a non-negotiable. Even when we get the vaccine, people will be required to wear the mask. Steve, we've had maybe about 160 kids or so that are participating in winter sports. So we randomly tested those students about 3 weeks ago. Every single one of those students' tests came back negative, high schoolers.
Wow.
So, you know, we're gonna do those types of things, and we believe that starting on March 15th, our educators will be eligible to start receiving vaccinations based on the governor's announcement last week.
How are your teachers reacting to this plan to bring them back to school and bring the students back?
I'd say it's mixed. Mm-hmm. It's been like that the whole year. 50% of people are pretty excited. 50% of people are not excited at all. And I think the same applies to some of our parents within the community. Even on our board, I think we might have more that want to see us get them back in some form or another, but we have some board members who think at this point they shouldn't be back at all. And so the feeling at this point is it's kind of a 50-50 type deal, but when the CDC comes out and says there's no reason why we shouldn't be in school, even if they're not vaccinated, if the districts are able to properly educate kids, you should be in school. And so what we know is we're doing a hybrid model. That hybrid model 100% guarantees that we'll be able to do the social distancing requirements. And so it's very difficult for me as a superintendent to defend against the CDC. You just can't.
How about parents and students? How are they reacting, Mark?
So we have a small segment within our school district of parents that have been expressing concerns and students that we've heard. We have not heard a lot from the vast majority of our schools. And I'd probably say probably 98% of our schools, we haven't heard the concerns that we're hearing from one or two schools in the district. And so I think some of that may be how are we messaging what we're doing in those particular schools? What have we not done, or what have we said that has given people this elevated level of anxiety? Because everybody's going to have a level of anxiety coming back. But I think as we get back into the flow of things and people see that we can actually do this, you know, we'll be back in normal operations in a very short period of time. And I think the thing too is, Steve, everybody has to understand, we're going to be living with this virus. I mean, it's just the reality of it. It's not like it's going away. I don't know if this becomes something that we have to do every year like the flu shot, but we have to begin to figure out how we're going to operate in our workforce, in our workspaces, the same way, because we've been living with it for a year.
Right.
And we still have to go out and go to grocery stores. We still have to go out and do whatever activities we've been doing, and we've done it in a safe manner, and we can do it in a safe manner as it pertains to educating children.
Dr. Mark Bedell is my guest. He's the superintendent of Kansas City Public Schools. We're talking about the return of the classroom coming up just 2 weeks from today for students. Teachers are back in schools today. You know, there's so much concern across the country about the COVID slide. You've heard a lot about this, meaning the amount of ground students have lost because they haven't been able to be in the classroom much during this pandemic. What are your concerns?
Ultimately, for us, we tend to talk and speak to it through a resiliency lens. I'm not interested in speaking through it through a deficit lens about the amount of loss. I think we have to talk about how are we going to accelerate learning. Our school district has been very intentional in working to see where we are with our students. We did interim assessments a few months ago that basically span from pre-K all the way to grade 12. And we have an idea of where our students are. People were frustrated with us because we tested them on some standards that hadn't been taught. But we needed to do that because I wanted to know, as far as, are there kids who are actually flourishing in this model that are further ahead and they've already mastered standards that haven't been taught yet? So how do we then provide a prescriptive plan to accelerate those while we also have those that we know have fallen behind? Everything is about acceleration, getting the kids who are behind to move up, getting the kids who are on par with where they should be to move up, and then the kids who are ahead. So we were very intentional in what we did, and that information is actually being shared with the State Department of Education as we speak, as they're doing a comprehensive review of the school district right now.
So what did you find?
So we definitely found that there's regression, right? I think every school district's dealing with that regression. And so what we said was, we have this data now. So we're gonna go in and we're gonna have our data collaboration conversations. Teachers are going to work on coming up with individual prescriptive plans. We know what standards we are behind on. We know what standards we're on grade level with. And we are compressing the curriculum to make sure that we're focusing on those things that are most essential. It's going to be the same thing that the state of Missouri is going to do when they give the end of year assessment. They're utilizing that data, not for an accountability purposes, but they're going to utilize it to take a deeper look at the standards and really focus on those priority standards as a state. What is it that we need to do to shift to make sure that what the state of Missouri expects kids to know and to be able to do, that our state is accommodating based on this set of data that they're going to get at the end of this year. So we're doing the same thing, but we're doing it now.
So what does all this do to hopes and your ambition for full accreditation? Because many of our listeners know that the district still lacks full accreditation from the state. It's provisionally accredited these days. And I know this remains a big goal of yours, Mark. The Missouri Education Department just asked a National Urban Education Coalition for its assessment of how the school district was performing. The group concluded that the district has made substantial progress and has only gained momentum. It said the district is worthy of full accreditation. What did you make of that?
Well, I was pretty surprised by it because they run key performance indicators of how we perform against other large urban school districts across the country.
And in fairness, that's a different set of standards than what the state of Missouri is looking at when it comes to deciding full accreditation.
It is. It is. I mean, they look at things such as the percent of students taking AP classes and the percent passing AP classes. They look at failure rates. They do look at your overall performance on your state assessment. And what they try to do is look at how you are performing on your state assessment in comparison to the state as a whole. So they do measure that. And what they found in their research and their running their KPIs was that KCPS had improved faster in both reading and math than the state and most other major city school systems. Mm-hmm. I knew we had improved faster than the state over the last several years. We've been closing gaps against the state in math and reading. We've earned exceeding expectations in math and reading on this much more rigorous math assessment. I also know that in science was the last time we took these state assessments in 2019, was the first time since 2014 the district had earned any points. Hmm. On a much harder test. We earned 8 out of 20. And so one of the things I shared with the commissioner was that if you average up our APR over the last 3 years, 2017, 18, 19, the district actually averaged over 70%. We were at 70.2%. Mm-hmm. And that includes having that zero in attendance in 2019. And so, you know, I said, I'm having a difficult time understanding how is it that we aren't fully accredited when I know for certain the district's outperforming several systems in the state that are fully accredited right now.
But bottom line, do you think COVID's going to wind up delaying your push for full accreditation?
We shall see, Steve, because they're doing a full-blown comprehensive review of the school district right now as we speak.
They being who?
DESE, the mm-hmm. Department of Elementary Secondary
the state,
Education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're doing it right now, and we just will have to see. The part that concerns me is the lack of having that state assessment being administered last year. But we do a lot of our interim assessments, and I know they're going to look at all of that data. But as I've said before, you know, I look at this data and I'm saying, well, I feel like we should have been accredited a year ago, right mm-hmm. after we had gotten this last set of data.
What's being lost because you don't have it, Mark, the full accreditation?
Well, it's just I'm in a very competitive market, and it's very difficult to compete when the first thing people look up on your website is they to see if you're fully accredited or not. And so that provisional accreditation makes it harder to be competitive in a highly competitive market. It makes it hard on me because if I am trying to go after a capital projects bond to modernize our buildings, which we haven't passed one since 1967, the first thing people will say is, well, these guys aren't even fully accredited. Why would I vote and support them, you know, if they're not even fully accredited? Mm-hmm. That accreditation gives us a different level of leverage. But I also tell people the accreditation is just that. It doesn't mean that our kids are where they need to be, right? And so I will celebrate that, but I've shared with our board when we have to push even harder because I don't think anybody ever wants to go back to not being accredited. It's mm-hmm. not a good feeling to be here. And, right. and I, you know, I got some people who are saying, you know, they've been in this district a long time, don't even know what that feels like. And so for us, this work that we're doing, it's for this community, it's for the people who've been in this district, you know, for decades that have never given up. And we're very close. We really are. And to get that letter of confidence from the Council for Great City Schools, that's huge.
Yeah.
That is huge.
We have a question here from a caller about accreditation. Mark from Kansas City, Missouri. Mark, you're on with Mark Bedell.
Yes, I was wondering about the much touted City Council for Great City Schools report. And I was wondering if I was reading something that the Council for Great City Schools is also a vendor of the school district or have a contract with the school district. And I'm just wondering if that's a conflict of interest. Hmm. Is that perceived at the conflict of interest?
Superintendent?
Yeah, so every school district has a contract. All urban school districts that are in it, they're member districts. And so we do pay for services. We do pay for this data. But what I can tell you is they will never write something like this if they didn't have the data to support it. The council has been working on this district for decades with this district. They've never written a statement like this. And in fact, when they came back to do a comprehensive audit of this school district in 2016, they referred back to an audit in 2018 where they said, these are things that we audited in 2008. We did a similar audit, and some of these things are still existing right now. And so what's different is we've taken well over the 100 and something findings just in the academic area, and we acted on those. We rewrote our curriculum. We got that curriculum vetted. We realigned our professional development. We really did focus on being a standards-oriented school district to give our kids a fair shot at being successful. And so you don't earn exceeding expectations in the state of Missouri if you're not growing kids at a faster rate than the average across the state of Missouri. And that's what we're doing for Hispanic and Black kids, because those are our two subgroups. You don't move from having several high schools that don't even offer an advanced placement class to now having multiple advanced placement classes across the school district, moving from, back in 2018, we had about 558 kids taking these rigorous courses. That number has jumped up to 753. Mm-hmm. Our IB scores now are competing at world IB averages. That wasn't the case a couple of years ago. We've gone from 2% or 3% of kids passing AP exams to 23%. So we have every piece of data. Our graduation rates went up from 68% to nearly 75% now, which is the highest rate that we've earned since this MCIP-5 program was launched. So yeah, you know, they're not going to put that kind of data out if our school district isn't performing, because they have a reputation they have to uphold. But I can speak to the data myself. I'm looking at all of it right now.
You know, Mark, you mentioned that the district hadn't passed a bond issue since, I think, the 1960s. David sent us a message on Twitter saying, ask the superintendent about how the school district has really had a massive property tax increase due to reassessments without a corresponding adjustment in the mill levy. Is that true?
I think people are referring to the 1 year of what happened, 2 years ago when the reassessment took place.
Right.
And a lot of people protested that, protested those rates going up. But overall, the school district, because of the way that we're set up here as a system, between 2008 and I would say probably 2016 or 17, you know, we lost millions of dollars on reassessment because we are under, I think we're part of the Hancock Amendment and maybe the only school district in the country that's under that situation. So, I mean, in the state that may be in that situation. So the school district, I don't know if it was $169 million we lost after we had that economy crash in 2008. And so there was no protection for the school district.
Right.
So we had this, a year ago, was the first year where we saw a significant increase in property tax value, but that wasn't enough money to do the capital work that needs to be done. You're talking about $350 million or so in deferred maintenance. I mean,
right.
We used that money to do some projects. We also used that money to start our newcomer center that we're starting this year for immigrant and ELL families that are coming into our district.
You know, a couple of other things. You know, the community is still seeing big numbers of violent crimes. You've talked about this before. How much of this violence, Mr. Superintendent, is attributable to schools that have ultimately failed them?
So I tell people that it's kind of an unfair statement to put all of that on the school district because, you know, I have no control over how economic development projects are happening. I have no control over disinvestment in communities where my kids over there on 31st and 29th, or actually 32nd and 33rd, having to walk to Central High School, you know, can't walk on sidewalks because is roots and weeds growing through the cracks. It's all kind of trash, you know, in a number of those yards where people just dump stuff in those communities and vacant lots. So, you know, I think that the violence is a byproduct of a failed city as a whole, you know, and with the school district, you know, we know that we play our role. And I tell people, I got 40% mobility. I've worked in a high performing school district. And in that high performing school district that I worked in, we didn't have that kind of mobility. I mean, we were lucky if we had even 10% of mobility across that school district. But 40% means that I'm having kids shuffling in and out. So the data is not going to look positive all the way around. But what we do know is we've also run our data on kids that stay with the school district 2 years or longer. And that data has shown that our kids are nearly performing at par with their peers across the state of Missouri, the ones who stay with us and they persist through. And so we've shared that data with the community. We've shared that data with our Board of Education. But there are a number of variables that are beyond the control of KCPS. I can't control evictions. I can't control the fact that the central feeder pattern has one of the highest eviction rates in the state. That's a fact. I can't control that. And so then when you think about violence and people moving in and out of communities and there's no consistency within the community, there's, you know, you got abandoned homes that you're dealing with. You know, these are the things I tell people. I have no problem going out, taking people on a tour. I want you to see the communities my kids have to navigate through in some cases.
Right.
The kids that have to walk over to J.A. Rogers and places like that. Just look at some of those neighborhoods and how everybody dumps trash in those neighborhoods, whether it's abandoned homes, so people dumping tires. It's not right. And right. So there's a lot of factors here that are beyond the control of the school district. And, you know, I'm not going to let people off the hook on that.
You know, before I lose you, I also wanted to ask you about race, because there's obviously a reckoning going on across the country when it comes to race these days. Has there been any impact on your school district that you've been able to see, Mark?
There's been impact. It makes people uncomfortable when we talk about it in this school district. The fact that we are requiring faculty and staff members to go through implicit bias training, the fact that we have completely dismantled our student code of student conduct discipline handbook. Mm-hmm. We've rewritten that. We will be launching a new book this fall. So we plan to update the board on all of that, where we are. We're looking at a no suspension policy for level one, level two infractions. All of these things are going to require additional support and resources from a budgetary standpoint. But what we've tried to do is eliminate the subjectivity that offers and inserts disproportionality in how kids are being treated in our school district because of how they show up, whether it's race, whether it's poverty. And we want to make sure that we're being fair by making sure that we educate people to check their biases at the door. Because when you show up with those biases, and everybody has them, nobody can sit here and say you don't have any type of implicit bias. We have it. So it has made people uncomfortable. And, you know, but you don't ever make this kind of progress by having everybody be comfortable. Right. We just have to face the facts that we got a major race issue here in Kansas City. And I'm not going to perpetuate it by allowing for people to apply a deficit lens in what our kids can and cannot do and what our families can and cannot do, you know, based on lived experiences.
That's Mark Bedell. He's the superintendent of the Kansas City, Missouri School District. Mark, always appreciate your time. Thanks for letting me hold you for a few extra minutes here. I wanted to catch your views on a couple of those final topics. Thanks so much, as always.
Thank you, Steve. Good seeing you, sir.
You bet.